Welcome to the InnovaBus podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't yet joined our wonderful Flywheel Nation community, go to flywheelnation.com and join in the podcast conversations. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast. Today, we're joined by Fred Carey, the visionary founder of IdeaPros, who transform everyday entrepreneurs into seasoned business veterans. Fred's insights are like a map in the wilderness, guiding you through the complex terrain of starting and scaling a business. His strategic advice provides the tools you need to navigate the challenges of entrepreneurship and thrive in both business and in life. Get ready to be inspired and equipped with the knowledge to excel. This is an episode you can't afford to miss. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast from San Diego, California in the USA, Fred Carey, the founder of IdeaPro, a company that he started with a mission of turning outsiders into insiders in the entrepreneur's market. So really keen to learn what the difference is there. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Fred. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you. On behalf of myself and IdeaPros, I'm happy to be here.
Now, IdeaPro, it is a platform to work with those who don't have access to venture capital or private equity. And in doing that, you help train and build businesses for those individuals because you believe that it's those individuals that are the backbone of the world's businesses. So I'm really keen to dig into your thoughts on that some more. But before we do that, Fred, what's the impact you're hoping to make in the world today?
Well, I think that, you know, as we get into the entrepreneurial space, we'll find that most people in this space are outsiders. They don't have the support system, the knowledge, the connections to really move forward in a chance for success sort of way. And the impact I want to make is to make sure that we all become a team, all working together, and the brotherhood and sisterhood of entrepreneurship is something that we can share and make better for everybody.
Yeah, I love that. It's interesting, isn't it? Most entrepreneurs, I think, when they first start, have some area of expertise that they think they're really good at. Might be building a product or building a system or building a service. And so they deliver that, but then realize that, hey, I want to build a business out of this. And they don't have, whilst they have that specific expertise, they don't really know what's involved in turning that into a business from a service or a product. What would you say to people that are in that situation right now that they should focus on, given that they have some expertise? What should they focus on as they get started into this entrepreneurial journey?
A little bit of knowledge is dangerous, you know, is where I would start with that. A lot of times we're very narrowly skilled in certain components of what it is we want to do. And creating a business is a lot different than just being deeply involved in your unique skill set. There are 1,000 different elements to launching a successful business. And I think my first word of caution would be that you can't do it alone, and you need to have help, you need to have support, you need to preferably even have a co-founder or two to take that journey with you.
Yeah, I think that's a key point, isn't it? That you can't do it all yourself. And the danger most people, I think the trap most people fall into initially is that they say, well, we can't bring other people on board because to get help with different elements of what I need done is going to cost money and I don't have enough money in the early stages. So they try and do it all themselves. And of course, you can tell in some businesses where websites is a classic example where you see a website and you think, well, you know, that's obviously somebody's built that themselves that doesn't really know that much about websites. And so they wanted to save money on getting a professional web designer and copywriter and so on. Given that sort of mindset, what are some of the areas that you think people should focus on first?
Well, I think fundamentally, you're in a race. When you start a new business, a new venture, a new product idea, you're in a race. You're in a race against competitors. You're in a race against the general market. And are you going to build a car to win that race? Or are you going to clog together a bunch of little scrappy pieces that give you zero chance of winning? And your example of a website's perfect. You know, if you're going to go do this, if you want to go rule the world like we all want to do, you're not going to do it with wooden swords. So you got to find a way to get the resources in play that you need, whether it's going out, getting venture capital, getting angel groups, getting co-founders that will work with you for shares instead of cash up in the very beginning. You need to find the tools that you're going to have in order to win the race, not just show up for the start and finish line.
Yeah, that's great advice. One of the things you've mentioned a couple of times now is the idea of bringing on board co-founders. How do you suggest people start that journey? I'm imagining it's no different than marketing a business in that you've got to start off with identifying who are the ideal customers in the case of marketing and how do you build relationships with them?
Well, I think the reality is in order to start an entrepreneurial journey, you're probably a little bit crazy. So you probably have a couple of little bit crazy people around you. It's very unlikely that if you're sitting there, you're kind of the rebel, the one that wants to break the rules, the one wants to do it on their own, that you don't have anybody around your ecosystem that's like you. And some of the best companies are forged from friends. The three guys that started Airbnb, you know, they were design school buddies. And they had an idea, they worked their asses off all together, and they finally got to where they needed to go, but they're around there. And if you don't find people in your groups, almost every single city, half-sized city, has entrepreneurial groups and clubs and organizations that you can join and just go have coffee or a glass of wine or whatever, make friends, look around, and you're going to find somebody that's really interested in your idea. You can also do it through things like LinkedIn. Find people that share your different interests and look for people who are out there looking for connections or looking for a job or something and just reach out to them. Especially if you're building something that's in technology, for example, and you're not a technologist, you better have a CTO. Somebody can act in that role because you're never going to get a dime in funding if you don't do those things.
All right. Now you've just touched on funding. So, and we talked earlier about outsiders and insiders. So talk to me a little bit about this idea of outsiders becoming insiders and how do we find out how we can get some funding?
Yeah. Well, first of all, 95% of us are outsiders. You know, when I was growing up, you were looking at your parents wanted you to be a doctor or a lawyer, or movie star, athlete is what we wanted to be. Nobody wanted to be an entrepreneur. Nobody knew what an entrepreneur was. But now, all over social media, that's all anybody ever talks about. You go on Instagram, nobody's going to teach you how to be a doctor. It's all about, hey, take this course so you can be an entrepreneur. You make millions overnight. It's really, really hard. And if you look at the data, the statistics, 94% of successful entrepreneurs, multimillionaires, billionaires, went to really prestigious schools. Over 60% of them have advanced degrees from those schools, and they can have their professor make a couple phone calls and get in to talk to money. The rest of us are outsiders. And that's really my mission, to take that 96% of people that are outsiders, make them insiders. One of the things that we do at Idea Pros for free, it's pitch.ideapros.com. You can go on there and learn how to pitch in a workshop, how to pitch like an insider. You learn everything that investors are looking for, and you can find out what it takes for you to go get the capital that you need. We've had, in the last 2 months, I brought seven different companies up to Silicon Valley. Of the seven, five of them have already gotten funded, and most of them have never pitched anywhere before. So it's really knowing what to do, how to do it, and having the connections to get you inside the door.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? We were having a conversation the other day about our careers. We're sort of reflecting back on our careers, and back in the day when I started my corporate career, it was very much a case of who you knew and what connections you had, because in those days there were very few jobs advertised at the level that I was wanting to enter into, and without those connections, now luckily I had some of those connections and I was able to land a very, very good job that I was very happy with to start with. But today it's very much like that in the entrepreneurial space, isn't it?
It is. It's an insider's game. It truly is. Mm. I mean, look, on one hand, anybody can be an entrepreneur. All you got to do is quit your job and go out and try to start something. The chances of succeeding are dismal. Even you look at the most famous entrepreneurs out there, and look up some of the stories with Elon Musk. In 2008, he took the last $90 million he had from PayPal and threw it into both SpaceX and Tesla, and he had to sleep on his friends' couches. He didn't have money for rent. And here's a guy that had got over $200 million when he got out of PayPal, spent his last penny. And so this struggle that just never ends, you know, even at the highest level. So the more connections you have, the more willingness that you have to persevere and to bring the people and resources in with you to continue going forward, even when things seem really, really tough. Those are the ones that are going to make it.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, that example is a really good one that highlights the idea of risk and risk tolerance. And I wonder how that plays a role in a lot of the failures that happen. Because if we come out of a corporate career, we haven't been taught how to take risk, have we? We haven't been taught what's good risk and what's bad risk. And even if we fail when we risk something, how do we recover from that? How do we learn from that?
We've been taught to be risk avoidant. Everything that we've learned has us planning for our retirement when we're 25. I don't even have a retirement account. Every single thing that I have, I pour back into my businesses, and I'm living for today. If anything happens to me, I have artwork all over the place worth a lot of money, but I'm taking my money and I'm putting it to use. And we're taught the opposite of that. You know, save it for when you're old and frail and you can't use it anymore, then you'll have it. So we're taught not to take risks. When is it a good risk? When is it a bad risk? It's a bad risk when you don't know what you're doing. Risks become better when you know what you're doing. It's always a risk. because you're trying to start something that doesn't exist, you're trying to penetrate a market where there's already competitors in there. So anything you do is a risk. But the way that we do our risks most of the time, it'd be like a professional football coach. I'm talking about American football now, pardon me. A football coach not knowing any of the rules. You know, well, I don't know what players I have. I don't know the opponents. I don't know how strong they are. I don't know what the rules of the game are. How many periods are there? How many quarters? What do the fans want to know? You know, we don't know any of those things when we go in as entrepreneurs most of the time. And if you relate that to sports, you go, that guy's never going to win any game. He doesn't even know the rules. That's how we make bad risks as entrepreneurs. We jump in because mom says our idea is a great idea. Instead of doing the research, getting the connections, having the tools you need to make it that you have a chance of even playing the game.
Yeah, it's a great analogy. One of the things I'm curious about, we've talked about, you know, taking an idea or starting an entrepreneurial journey, and usually that involves taking an idea and growing that. How do you, within Ideas Pro, because I guess that's at the core of the name, in fact, how do you foster that culture of continuous building of ideas and innovation, and what role does that play in the business success of any business?
Well, innovation is critical for any business. For Idea Pros in particular, we're constantly being bombarded with new ideas from entrepreneurs. We've had over 100,000 applications of people who work with us. So we've vetted so many ideas. And what I really look for, and I think your audience, if they're people are trying to get out on their own, should really look for is, by the way, I've had 10 companies before Idea Pros, and 8 of them were successful using this formula. So write this down, boys and girls. Look for a market that's proven itself and that's growing and growing fast. Look for competitors that have shown that you can go from 0 to 1 billion pretty quickly, but they're not doing things well. Look for an audience that really loves what they have, but they want something else. In other words, you're looking for robust markets that have a hole in them. So if you find a market that has proven itself, the competition is healthy, customers are yearning for this one thing that the competitors don't give, then you create that one thing. And that's why my companies have been so successful, not because I'm some genius, but because I'm looking for holes in markets that are growing. I'm looking for opportunities. That's why I started Idea Pros. You know, what bigger hole is it than an opportunity where 95% of the market is not being served? And that's what's in entrepreneurship. And that's why there's such demand here. So I challenge each of you, go out and do that. Find a robust market. You can point to your competitors and say, look what these guys did. They're not even doing a good job, and they're billion-dollar companies now. They're missing this one thing. This is what I have. And look at all these customers over here saying they want this one thing. So it's a shoe-in. You know, it's evolution, not revolution. Nobody's going to back revolution. Everyone's going to back evolution.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And there's so many opportunities like that, aren't they? I mean, I have experiences all the time where I find – I encounter frustration, and it's those gaps that you've just described. Yeah. It's exactly those gaps.
Yeah. That's all you got to find. Yeah. Find what people are bitching about.
So let's say we've discovered something like that and say, well, you know, I have the expertise to do that really well, this particular gap that I've just identified. What should we do to kind of determine, you know, is that commercially viable? Are people going to pay for that in a way that I can build a sustainable business on the back of that?
You know, that's a great question that nobody asks. If you look at the number one in the U.S., I don't know about the rest of the world, in the U.S., the number one point of failure for new entrepreneurial businesses is that the entrepreneur created something there's no demand for. You think it would be like, we couldn't get the funding, our product, we got here and it broke, it didn't work like it was supposed to. No, you created something that nobody wants. And so, to your point, the very first thing you need to do is really in-depth research of everything in the stratosphere that you're going to be in and narrow it down to exactly what you're trying to do to see in advance, is there a market? How do I approach the market? What's my niche in that marketplace? What's my go-to-market strategy? How do I keep the wolves at bay as I'm growing up into a wolf myself? In fact, that's what we do when people come in. And that was the very first thing I focused on building AI around. We have a system now that literally in overnight will have a 70-page report that tells you everything that you need to know about your marketplace, your niche, your go-to-market strategy, the weaknesses of your competitors, literally everything, and the chance of this market growing. Most people don't do that. They don't take the time to do that. And it's fundamental. It's your playbook. It's like that coach on the football team, you know, that's the playbook for, or hers, playbook for the game ahead and the season ahead. And if you don't have the playbook, you're not going to make it.
Yeah. It's very haphazard then, isn't it? So you mentioned leveraging AI, and I'm interested. I mean, I'm completely fascinated by what's been happening over the last nearly 2 years with AI and what you can do with it. How can it shape the landscape for entrepreneurs? What are some of the opportunities it presents? And also, what are some of the challenges?
Well, regardless of the business that you're going to go into, if you're not embracing AI, you don't have a chance of winning. What I was just talking about, the report I was just talking about, it used to take us 3 months to generate. 3 months with a lot of heavy lifting, a lot of really expert people. And now it takes a day. And it only takes a day because we have humans reviewing the data and making sure that it's spot on before we release it to our clients. Otherwise, I could have it to you in 30 seconds. 70 pages and tell you your whole life for the whole next year and what you're going to do as a brand new company. To have those tool sets, you need them to be ahead of everybody else. If you don't, or even with everybody else, if you don't have them, you're going to be a laggard. So I think that no matter what business you're in, customer service, sales, there's a company, I think it's called Air.ai, and it's not a plug for them. I don't know if their system's any good, but literally their pitch is you're going to have 100,000 salespeople at your fingertips overnight by deploying our stuff. And it's all human language, human learning. You can call people and try to convince them. If they left the shopping cart full, you have this AI voice that comes on, calls them and convinces them to go back and sell their cart or make the purchase on their cart. And it is completely artificial. And it's an ability to have this massive sales force by paying one monthly fee. And so if you're not using those tools, then you are heavy in costs compared to your competitors. And when you're heavy in cost, you're low in margin, and that's not a sustainable business. So AI all the way.
Yeah. One of the challenges I see with it, I mean, you mentioned another challenge there, which is accuracy of the information and being able to rely on it, which is where in your system you have people review the reports that are generated. The other thing that I see as a real danger, and you know, we've seen this in email marketing, we've seen this in the traditional marketing funnels that people use, is it kind of abandons the human relationships. So I wonder how you see that, for example, in that Salesforce, AI Salesforce, how does the human relationship part play into that, particularly for larger purchases?
Yeah, it's really interesting because the AI model that I was testing with this one company started having this banter with the customer on the other end of who was going to win the boxing match between Elon Musk and the head of Meta. And they were having this dialogue, and for a minute, I couldn't tell which one of the two voices was the AI voice. So it is getting scary good. But the way I think of AI is the same way I think of an x-ray. You got great data there, but you really need to have the experts to interpret it and figure out what to do at the end. When you're talking about that high ticket item, the problem with AI is you're not going to have this, although you can. Typically, you're not going to have the visuals. You're not going to be able to look at each other, talk to each other, get a sense of what we're all about, and make a consultative close on it. But you can get a long way there using AI, so that when you have that human-to-human meeting, you're there to close a deal, not just to start the process of beginning a sales process.
Yeah. Yeah, that's certainly a good point. The other thing I see that it really enables, which is something that I've been sort of really passionate about, leveraging time zones and having sort of 24-hour availability in terms of customer service and so on. And that certainly does that, because no matter what your office hours are, that AI that you can chat with as a customer is online 24/7.
Yeah. So it's I have no idea what's going to happen 5 years from now, because we're really literally at the, you know, and let me interrupt myself. When we first started speaking, you said that you're into tomorrow already, and I asked how tomorrow is, because I'm in California and you're in Australia. But I don't know what 5 years from now is going to be, because we're really at the infancy of AI, and where it's going to take us from this point forward, it's pretty scary. I do know that probably a lot, the biggest initial hit, I think, is going to be a lot of the $4 an hour virtual assistants have all around the world and in third world countries that are working for a fraction of what people would work for in the US or Australia. They may end up being some of the first victims of something like this, even though the labor is really inexpensive. The fact of the matter is there's tool sets out there with AI that can be $0 an hour. And so I see that happening. Where it's going to go higher up the food chain, it's pretty scary, because I think at some point AI will, certainly within 5 years, AI will be trained to do the things that my experts do when they review those reports to make sure they're okay. Yeah. There will be a self-review within 5 years from now. Now what do you do? So marry a robot, maybe.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I was videoing some birds doing some funny things the other day, and I posted the video to YouTube. That was just a personal video that I posted on a personal YouTube channel, and I haven't had this before, but as I went to publish that video, I had to declare on YouTube that this was not altered in any way to make it appear that people were doing things that they didn't actually do. And the content was not altered in any way that people would not, that people were saying things that they didn't actually say. So I thought, well, what that tells me is that AI can do that.
Oh yeah, AI can do that. And by the way, if you have a new technology that can do good and do bad, the do bad part grows faster than the do good part. They're historically, if you look at the data, quote unquote, fake news, whatever you want to call that, not well thought out news, not well researched news, travels seven times faster, gets spread seven times faster than real news. That's before AI. Now, again, I don't know where any of this is
exponential,
but you need to stay on top of it.
Yes, so there's some of the challenges, even though it's exciting stuff. And as you mentioned, I think we're on the cusp of that inflection point that Malcolm Gladwell refers to. Mm-hmm. All right, now, one of the things I'm curious about in your career, and you mentioned earlier you've had several companies, Was there any time where you had to completely reimagine your approach based on a challenge or based on some big change like AI? And how did you tackle that?
Well, I'd be a shorter answer if your question was there ever a time when you didn't have to reimagine your approach? You know, well before AI, almost everything you do as you get into that process, you see that, oh, you know what? We're doing it this way, but gosh, this other way would be better. And I think that really is a cornerstone to entrepreneurship. Never be so married to your idea that you're not looking to obsolete yourself. And for me, that's the challenge for every entrepreneur. Even if your business is doing great, figure out every morning when you wake up, first thing you figure out, how do I make myself obsolete? Why? Because if you're not doing it, if you're not creating the next best thing around
somebody else will.
Yeah. That's right. And it's not going to be so pretty when somebody else does it. So yeah. Always to stay on top of the game. And so almost every single company I had, I had to make major changes in order to get to the finish line that I was looking for.
Yes, that's I often kind of remind myself of that. If you're not going to do this, somebody else will, and then it's not in your control.
Exactly.
It's always better to be in your control.
Right. And that's, you know, to my prior example of finding a hole in the marketplace, right? That's what all these competitors are sitting there fat and happy, making hundreds of millions of dollars or more. They're just sitting there resting on their laurels. Wow, we're doing great. And you find that hole and go after it, then all of a sudden you're the big dog, and you want to stay the big dog. So if you're really going forward, look for the hole in your own marketplace and make sure that you fill that.
That's really good advice. Yeah. So kind of turn around to become your own customer, and what are the frustrations they're experiencing and what are the holes?
Yeah. Fix them. Yeah. I have one of my friends, Robert Richmond, wrote a book on culture. He was one of the first members of Zappos, and Zappos became the largest shoe company in the world, acquired by Amazon, I think, in 2009 or something. And they literally had a bell they would ring at customer service when somebody called up with a major complaint. And the reason they were happy when somebody called up with a major complaint is they knew, number one, we're going to resolve that complaint, whatever it is. We're going to fix it. You need a new pair of shoes. You know, you need a different size. You need one of one size, one of another. Whatever it is, we're going to fix it. And the data showed that people who were upset with you as a company and later became happy had 2.4 times the lifetime value as a customer as somebody that was happy all along. Yeah. And so, you know, look at yourself, look at what you're not doing well, exploit the things that you're not doing well, because when you can take people who are not happy with your offering, all of a sudden they become thrilled with your offering, they're going to hang around for a long time.
Yeah. I think that's something that a lot of people misinterpret. And I think, you know, the complainers are, I mean, there's always people that complain just for the sake of complaining, but to dismiss all complaints and say, well, that's just a burden on our customer service or so on is a really bad thing. And I often, when I have issues and I'm talking to a company and customer service, I often remind them of that. I say, look, I'm doing you a service by taking the time to actually complain and give you feedback on what's not working. And yes, I want something in return for that. I'm unhappy with a service or a purchase or whatever, and I want that fixed. But at the same time, I'm also giving you a gift. I'm giving you the gift of feedback, because what I could do is just grumble to all my friends or grumble on social media about how bad your service is, and that will turn other people off, and I'll never purchase from you again, and you won't find out about it until it's too late to do anything about it.
That's a great point. When you pick up the phone, you have a disgruntled customer. That's so much better than having one that hates you so much they're never going to call you. Yeah. They're going to tell everybody else in the world about you. but not yeah. give you a chance to make things right. So when you pick up that phone call and there's somebody who's not happy, you just take a second, go, praise the Lord, and get on that phone call and make them a happy customer. And that's going to work really well for you and for everybody they know. And by the way, if they posted, I've had people that posted 1-star reviews. You know, in my business, you're trying to change lives. And it's either 1-star reviews or 5-star reviews. There's no, nobody gives you a 2-star, 3-star, 4-star review in my business because I'm here to change lives. And so I have fortunately 95% 5-star reviews, but the 1-star reviews are, oh, they're crooks and they don't do anything. And I've shattered my dreams. And so that's really horrible to have to deal with. So when I ever see something like that, I immediately call them up. What did I do wrong? What can I do better? You realize this is on you. You're the entrepreneur. You got to make it work. How can we work together? And to turn those people around and turn them into a 5-star review, which I've done several times, is amazing. Some people are going to just stick, you know, with 1-star no matter what you do. But try to convert as many people that reach out to you and have a bad experience. Make it a great experience.
Yeah, that's a really important point. I always say I was for a time I was doing some consulting work around helping businesses with their Google reviews, and the most common question I had was, how do I remove a bad review from Google? And I said, no, what you do is reach out to the person and find out what the issue is.
Right.
And then, because I say, first of all, you can't remove bad reviews because otherwise the review system would be fake. So Google is going to make sure it's in their interest that the review system is genuine. So they're not going to let you remove a bad review simply because you don't like it. I said, what you do is you reach out to the person and see what the issue is, see if you can make the issue right. Once you've dealt with the issue and resolved the issue, then you go back and you respond to the review, describing what you did, describing the resolution, and you invite the person to perhaps review their review. And 9 times out of 10, if you've converted them from a 1-star to a 5-star, it's highly likely they'll comment and maybe change it to a 5-star, but certainly they'll probably comment and say, well, this was addressed to my satisfaction.
Yeah, and by the way, I've seen many 1-star reviews because, you know, human behavior. If I want to buy a new product, the very first thing I do is go to the 1-star reviews, always. And I'll look at them, And there's people that haven't changed their reviews, but they're like, oh, you know what? This thing arrived and there were 7 broken pieces and I was really pissed off and I wrote to them and then like, but they sent me a brand new one and sent me free shipping to get the old one back. And I really loved the new one. Kept it as a 1-star review, but added the language in there that the situation was addressed.
That's
so
right.
Now I look at it and go, all right, number one, that guy's an asshole. And number two, I'm going to go start looking at the 5-star reviews.
Yeah. 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 I certainly look at reviews as well. And I do tend to do what you do is look at the bad reviews first. So what have people complained about? A lot of it, last year we did a long road trip in the US and we were looking at accommodation and I was looking at the reviews there and I'd look at the poor reviews because they'd come up with things like didn't have heating in the room, you know, and we were traveling in summer. So I said, well, it's not important to me. So right. I'm fine with that.
Didn't have toilet paper. Yeah. A little bit more important.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, this is fantastic, Fred. We could go on talking customer service and entrepreneurship, and we've delved into AI, but there's a lot more to explore there. But I think it's a good point now, though, to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. It's the same 5 questions I ask of every guest. The idea is that you'll give us some insightful answers and inspire our listener to go and do something awesome as a result today.
Well, I hope I'm up to the challenge. Set? Yeah. Unlike everybody else in the world, I never peek at the questions in advance. So throw them at me.
Excellent. All right. What's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
get outside your comfort zone. Just get out of there. That comfort zone's not really a comfort zone at all. It's quicksand that your parents, your grandparents, your family, your community, the corporate America or corporate world have put you into. You can't be innovative when you're following all the rules. Get out of the quicksand. Get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, yeah. I like that reframe, the quicksand, because, that suggests that the comfort zone is probably only comfortable for a short amount of time, because exactly. Otherwise you'll sink and suffocate.
Hey, by the way, I know this is an important fire question here at the time, but when I was a kid, I used to dream all the time about being in quicksand. I've never seen quicksand in my life. I don't all think right. anybody else has either. So,
Interesting. Well, maybe that's why you're so driven to make sure you're out of the comfort zone most of the time. Yeah. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
The best thing I've done to develop new ideas is wake up in the middle of the night. And I'm sure that several people have had this happen. I was a musician until like 22 or so. Well, I'm still technically a musician, but I would literally wake up in the middle of the night with a full song complete in my dream. And I have to get up right away and write it.
All right.
And so I think, I think for everybody, have a pen or pencil and a notepad next to your bed, because the people who are most likely to be innovative are going to wake up in the middle of the night and have this idea, grab it, run with it.
Yeah. I like the pen and paper next to the bed. That's something I've got there. I find that I'll wake up and I'll have some idea and I won't be able to get back to sleep again.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I'll be starting to work on the idea sometimes. But most importantly, I'll be worried that if I do fall asleep, I may lose the idea. I may not remember it the next morning.
You will definitely lose the idea. Don't lose the idea, ladies.
Yeah, So that's the most important reason to have the bit of paper there. All right. What's a favorite resource that you use most often?
I'd say my girlfriend, but that's not the type of question answer you're looking for. The most important resource that I use every single day are the really intelligent people I have around me that work with me. And you look at people from the founder of Virgin Airlines down, Richard Branson, said that what I do is I come up with really good ideas, I surround myself with even better people, and I get the hell out of the way. And so for me, the biggest resource that I have is those people I choose to surround myself with. So choose wisely, because those people are going to make your future.
Yeah, I love that. And I hope your girlfriend is part of those people.
She is. Don't tell her that.
Yeah. All right. What's the best way to keep a project on track?
Well, hopefully somebody can write to me and give me the answer to that one, because it's really elusive. But to me, the best way is not through me, because I wander. The best way is to have a really succinct operating team that is focused on Gantt charts, deliverables, timelines, and that really doesn't lose focus. Some of the problems you can have, especially as a technology company, is let the engineers run the show, because they're never satisfied. There's always something that's happening. There's always a desire to, oh, we could do this other thing, create this other widget. Same thing with app development. Oh, it should be blue instead of purple, and we should add this one feature that, oh, by the way, nobody's ever going to use in their lives. And so this feature creep is the biggest challenge to anything you're building. Get away from feature creep. Agree, this is the core fundamental thing I want to build. Forget the bells and whistles. Build that core thing. Get it out there. Then the bells and whistles can be made in response to what customers say they want.
Yeah, that's a really, really smart approach, and also, you know, it's consistent with what you mentioned earlier about bring the idea and then get the hell out of the way, let the people who implement do their thing.
Right.
All right, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves? We might have covered this already.
I think the biggest thing you can do to differentiate yourself is to look at old problems in new ways. Number one, there's no business that's ever going to succeed if there's no problem, right? So we create these, oh, wow, nobody's ever thought of this. Well, make sure that you're addressing a problem. So look at the problems that exist and find a new way to address those problems. You're always going to be differentiated from the rest of the crew. What happens if there's a problem? There's a solution, right? When I invented the very first car, I'm not that old, I didn't do that, but I invented the very first car. I could definitely argue there's no competitors. I'm the very first car, but the competitor is the horse. Problem was transportation, right? And you just had a different way to transport people. So find something that there's a problem, horse, transport, find a better way, car, and make that happen. That's how you differentiate yourself all the time.
Yeah, and that's a really good way to look at that problem, because often that's described as people say all we needed was a faster horse or a faster horse and carriage. But what was developed was the automobile. But it was actually, if you turn it around in the way you've described it, it was what's the problem? What's the issue? How can we do it better in a different way?
Exactly. By the way, just another little meaningless point, but everybody's going to remember this because we're talking about electric cars, and now Elon Musk actually brought it to the forefront. Now everybody needs to be electric by a certain day. And God, if I was the first person to think of the electric car, I could be a gazillionaire by now. The first electric car was built in 1890.
Yeah.
1890.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I came across that a little while ago. I can't remember why, but I thought, oh, in fact, I think it certainly preceded the first commercial gas-driven car.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was a better idea. Timing was wrong.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, thanks, Fred. This has been absolutely fabulous. Thanks for getting us through the buzz round. Now, where can people find out more about you, about Ideas Pro, and maybe even reach out and say thanks for what you've shared today?
Okay, well, first of all, www.ideapros.com. If you go on there, the very first thing you're going to see is a free membership. You can go there. I literally every single week we give you different advice on being an entrepreneur. We never want to get anything from you. We have free workshops going on every single week on different things that you as an entrepreneur need to know. The second way to reach out to me is on Instagram, official Fred Carey, Carry. I have about 500,000 entrepreneurs following me right now. And maybe you can make it 500,000 in one if you follow me too. And finally, if you have this kick-ass idea and you really want to go all the way to town with it, then you can just fred@ideapros.com. Send me an email. My assistant hates it when I say this, but fred@ideapros.com. I'll answer you and I can either help you or point you in the right direction.
Excellent. Well, thanks for that, Fred. And of course, we'll post those links in the show notes. So what action would you like our listener to take out of today's conversation, Fred?
You've probably been sitting around waiting to do that thing that you wanted to do. I don't know if it's a week, a month, a year, 5 years, whatever it is, get up tomorrow and do it. Take that one step to get to where you want to go in your future. It only takes that very first step. And the very first step that you take is the hardest step of all of them. It really, whether you're working out, you want to go on a diet, you want to ask that girl or guy whether they want to go out with you, you want to change your career, you want to start something new, that first step is the hardest step. So tomorrow morning, whatever that is, take that first step.
Yeah, yeah, great advice. And yeah, it's amazing. We kind of look at the whole picture often, don't we? I know I do this a lot, and it gets really overwhelming. And then I always remind myself, what's the first step? Okay, that first step's pretty easy.
I can do that.
And like you say, that's the hardest. Often from there, is everything just falls into place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, inside every one of us, there's the best of us that's dying to get out. And every one of us knows, no matter where you are up the food chain, every one of us knows that we're not doing as much as we have the capability of doing. So do a little bit more every day. 1% more every day, you'll be 3,648% better by the end of the year.
Yeah, love it. Love it. Well, great. Thanks, Fred. Thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today on the Innova Buzz podcast. I've really enjoyed the conversation, and all the best for the future. Please do stay in touch.
Thank you. I shall. And I need to get to Australia, so show me around.
Thanks for listening. We'd love you to leave a review on this episode. It will help us to make the podcast better for you. Simply go to lovethepodcast.com/InnovaBuzz and pick your preferred platform. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/flywheel and secure your membership to the exclusive Flywheel Nation community, where you will enjoy direct access to our incredible podcast guests, engaging meaningful conversations, and participate in connection events designed to elevate your business journey. Don't miss out. Join Flywheel Nation today. Tune in again to the next episodes of the Innova Buzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.